Scientific and technological advances and open markets are creating both opportunities and challenges for today's organizations. To stay relevant as a company, you need to be able to adapt to unprecedented change, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. In this podcast, we will explore how leaders can build such organizations. Hey everyone, and welcome to our next episode. This is our fifth. It's also Jimmy, our new co-host's first episode. Hi, Jimmy. How does it feel to be part of this?
Hello. It feels great. I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm really excited. So thanks for inviting me to this.
Absolutely. Really exciting to have you here.
All right, Wasse. So what are we going to talk about today?
So today we're going to talk about a concept which people refer to with different names. One of them is people first, or people-centric, people-optimistic. The one that I prefer mostly is the one that's called people-positive. I think that one captures the essence of it the best currently. To a large extent, it's a concept that is the foundation for other concepts that we've talked about in this show previously. It's about a number of things. One of them is these are organizations that are assuming the best in the people that they hire. They assume that they come in with good intent in every situation. It's also about expecting them to bring the best effort and bringing in a willingness to learn and improve. And thirdly, it's about organizations that are having empathy for each individual and the system that they're part of. And organizations understand that people do make mistakes, they misjudge, but they're also willing to learn from their mistakes.
Well, so this sounds like obvious great stuff, but for clarification's sake, can we briefly discuss what the opposite look like? If you're living in an organization where we don't assume good intent and the best in people, what does that look like?
Do you perhaps have an example to be a bit more specific?
Well, one example, I'm going to retell this in a generic form, is that when a deadline was missed, there was a kind of a hunt for a scapegoat or desire to find an explanation to why we missed this important deadline, not embracing the fact that everyone actually did their best given the circumstances. And there's so many reasons to why you might miss a deadline. And there's so many other reasons that are beyond your control that might make you hit the deadline.
I think we all have experienced this in the past. That would be my guess, at some form or another, at least.
Do you have a good example of this when you've seen it working the way it should?
Yeah, the best example that I have is from when I joined Spotify. Spotify at the time, they might still do this, to have introduction days where they gather all employees that were hired in the last couple of months. So in these introduction days, the then chairman, Martin Lorentzon, was up on the stage. Something that actually shocked me was that he said, you don't need me or Spotify. On the contrary, we need you. There are many options for you to choose from out there, and we're very happy that you chose us. And we don't expect you to stay at this firm for a long time. We hoped you will stay for a long time, but we don't expect you to stay. And we would like for you to stay as long as possible. Some of you will work for a very long time. Some of you quit Spotify, learned a lot and start new companies and contribute to the innovation in the world in Sweden. You don't need us, but we really need you. So we need to motivate you and want you to stay here. And that message really was fantastic as a new starter. I was really surprised. My experience from the past was on the contrary. So I was very happy and pleased. And for me, it really ignited this, wow, willingness to be here. And it sent a message that they really appreciate me for joining and they want me to contribute. And it brought a message of trust for me.
It is a really strong statement. And this connects to another thing when we're talking about assuming good intent and people positive. In order for people to bring their best, they need to be motivated. And I subscribe to Daniel H. Pink's idea he presents in Drive. Motivation comes from autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Autonomy, feeling a sense of being able to self-direct, mastery, being able to get better at what I get better at. Purpose, it's what I do is connected to something bigger. I understand what I'm doing. So even though I totally agree that we need to start with the people and caring for them, but we also need to create an environment and a culture within which they can flourish, right? And so that kind of brings me back to purpose. So it needs to be people first and I guess purpose first. They come hand in hand. It's not enough with an environment with psychological safety and safe to fail and where I feel trusted. I also need to feel that what I'm doing is connected with something bigger, the motivation.
You mentioned safe to fail. So I find it quite interesting. It's environments that are designed to be focused on finding learnings instead of assuming blame and punishment. Creating that can be very, very powerful. One concrete example of that is I was at a previous company that were moving their product to the cloud. They didn't know how long time it was going to take. They had no idea. It was the first time they worked in the cloud. So they had their engineers experiment a lot and how much it was going to cost, what is the price model, that was all up in the air. And at one point during this experimentation, there was this query made to the cloud. And one individual, after the query, got a ping and said, okay, this query cost you 5 or 6 figure, meaning tens of thousands of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars for a single query.
Wow.
And that came as a pretty big shock. Interesting, what happened was there was no blame for it, but it was more, oh, look, that sounds ridiculous. That's not something that we want in production. That's not what we want in final solution. That's pretty hefty. Okay, that's a great learning. So let's take that information back to our third-party vendor and talk to them about that, that this model that we've set up currently, the price model, it seems like in the long run, this is not going to work for us. Is there any way that we can tweak that or work with us so we can have a better price model that fits both you and us better? It was a really great example of finding a safe to fail environment. So go out and experiment, run tests, see what happens. Okay, let's focus on the learnings. It's a really great example.
I'd like to explore that a little bit more. You mentioned the safe to fail environment. What does that mean? Can I go around, make mistakes and not be blamed? Well, we can optimize for two things, I guess. We can optimize for fail prevention. So we can invent processes and bureaucracy and routines that prevents us from making mistakes. Might reduce the number of errors we make, but it will be a super slow process. Or we can optimize for a failure recovery. We allow people to run fast, experiment, try things out. And since we assume a good intent and people are actually doing their best, once things mess up or we fail or production goes down, we have routines and habits and structure and technology to recover fast, and then we learn from it. So that's for me a safe to fail environment. We maximize learning, and when things goes wrong, well, we can easily revert back or fix what's broken, and then we investigate. So what happened and what did we learn from this? And we celebrate that habit of failing and learning.
So one concrete example of that would be writing your code in a way that if one feature fails in the product, that doesn't end up the whole product failing. So if you have, for instance, Netflix, if you want to use search, and then if search fails, that doesn't prevent you from actually playing a movie or TV series, for instance.
Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah, there are more technical examples of this, how to kind of make it safe to fail. The one you mentioned there is the coupled architecture. So if one thing breaks, the other parts still run. One other path you can walk down is to do gradual rollout instead of doing a big bang scary thing. You release the new version of your service to just a few subset of users, and then you're closely monitoring production logs. And if it feels good and safe and stable, well, you ramp it up to more. It makes it safe to try and safe to fail as well. And there are plenty of more hide things behind feature toggles or dark launches, and yeah, tons of stuff one can do. So if this were examples of technology, then we have the human aspect as well. For example, when things go wrong, instead of doing hunt for blame, finding the scapegoat, we do a postmortem. So we invite everyone who has something to contribute, who took part in on the journey that led up to this dramatic failure. Everyone contributes on what happened in which order, and which decisions were made, and what was the reason behind the decisions, and what assumptions made us do them, and so on. And then we try to learn from it instead of finding who to punish.
Another great example. One team I worked with, they had a big whiteboard wall at their team area. It said fail/learning wall. And there people were encouraged to post their failures and learnings that they made in their everyday. And it was a fantastic way to see. It encouraged failure and learning and not be shamed of failure. So if you were a new person coming into the team and hadn't experienced this, it might be difficult for you to share your failure. But if you saw this visual wall with post-its on it, oh, and read it, there's plenty of failures in this team, and this is what they learned from it. So maybe I'm also willing to do that, and it brings me a lot of value as well. It's a really good example of going away from blame and punishment and focusing on failure and learning instead. Another thing is not completely related, but what I thought about is you should always be approachable to your colleagues at work. Regardless of role, tenure, experience, background, is this anything you've experienced?
Yeah, definitely. I've been in so many companies where the C-suite or leaders high up, they don't sit in a separate office in a fancy building. No, they're right in the middle of everyone else. Use the same coffee machines, and they don't have a room. They have a desk in an area somewhere. The purpose of this is twofold. One is approachability, creating a sense that you can talk as much to me as everyone else, and I want to talk to you. And the other thing I believe is that it can read the vibe, what's going on. They can have a sense of the pulse of progress and people. Another trail of thought I had before we start wrapping this up is that I'm convinced that if you feel motivated, and as we mentioned in the beginning, having a people-positive approach to everything, assuming good intent and expecting people to bring their best, and having empathy creates motivation. And if you are motivated, that's when you truly start to act responsible. If I actually care, if I feel motivated, that means I care about what I do and the quality I deliver. And that will raise my willingness and to pay extra energy to make responsible choices, to make responsible decisions. If I'm not motivated, if I don't care, I'm just going to go to work and do whatever. I'm just going to tick the boxes in my to-do list or just the tasks on my sprint backlog. But if I'm motivated, I'm going to feel a responsibility to actually deliver great quality and learn from that. So I think motivation also brings acts of responsibility.
All right. So to become people positive, make sure to assume the best in people. Every employee has passed the hiring process and was hired to use their specific skill and develop further. So reminding them of this will make people feel appreciated and motivated. It also helps to be open to receive, share, and discuss different perspectives, regardless of role, tenure, gender, and background. Create a safe-to-fail environment by learning through experimentation, for instance, through postmortems or fail learning walls. Also designing and optimizing for fail recovery over fail prevention. For example, implementing feature flags, gradual rollouts, having a decoupled architecture. Finally, in addition to being people positive, providing a clear purpose and opportunities for people to develop skills will help greatly.
What does this lead to? Why is it worth the effort of creating a people positive culture and environment?
It leads to conditions for safety and trust to happen, for growth and improvement. It allows people to excel and bring their A game. And this is really foundational and key, especially in a collaborative context.
Cool. So for me, that's a wrap up.
Yeah, and thanks everyone for listening in. And we'll be back with another episode. Thanks for listening. See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.